Coming up next on Tech News Today, Google Home is playing ads that aren't ads because Google says so. Swatch plans its own smartwatch OS. DeepMind got a lot of sensitive medical information to train its AI without proper consent. Brian Clark from The Next Web tells us what we missed at this year's South by Southwest. And we get close to the edge of a volcano and live to tell the tale. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1726, recorded Thursday, March 16th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT.
And by Grasshopper, stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you everything you need to know about technology. Today, I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I was searching frantically to see if there's any picture that exists of me with a ponytail so that I can match your ponytail. It didn't happen. Google Photos is really great, though. You could do a search for ponytail, and it'll show you all your pictures that are there in there with ponytails.
Ponytail?
Yes.
And then were you searching for black and white? You can search.
I did a search for black and white because I have a bunch of old like punk rock photos from when I was in high school, and they're all black and white. And yeah, sure enough, I mean, take a look. Black and white photos. Punk rock photos.
So you wrote the term.
See? There we are, rockin'.
Black and white in your Google Photos.
That was my search. And it returned some that weren't, but man, that's awesome.
Yeah, Google is so awesome.
Google can do nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong.
Ever.
Nothing at all.
Nope. Hey, top story.
It was the Google Home daily briefing heard around the world. A tweet began circulating early this morning with a video of Google Home playing an advertisement after the user's daily briefing. Now, the ad was for the live-action film Beauty and the Beast, and some people using the Google Assistant on Android phones said they also saw or heard that ad. In a statement, Google said, "This isn't an ad, but a, quote, partner that they invited to, quote, be our guest and share their tales." Mm-hmm. They really said, "Be our guest," which is one of the songs from Beauty and the Beast. It made me think that maybe even Google statements now are free for advertisers to, not free, but open to being sponsored by advertisers. Business Insider says Google has since removed the mention of Beauty and the Beast from Google Home. But mm-hmm. You heard it this morning.
I did. I heard it like very early this morning with my daily briefing before I knew it was even news, and I didn't think twice about it. I was like, oh, okay. And I moved on with my life. I don't know. It really didn't bother me. And I think part of that is because like you do your daily briefing, you're like, hey, gee, you know, what's my day like today? And it kind of goes through, you know, the weather and what you've got on your calendar, whatever. And then it transitions into podcasts, in my case, you know, news and technology news podcasts. And it was right in between there where it says, oh, and by the way, you know, the live action Beauty of the Beast releases today. Did you know that Belle is the inventor in this one? If you want to find out more about Belle, just ask. And now here's your podcast. It was pretty quick. It's an ad, even though Google says it's not an ad. It's totally, like, there's something going on there. But I don't know if they got paid for it. They say they're playing around with a format. I've heard other things in that spot before, like on Valentine's Day. It was like this little musical serenade, and it was like, did you know that today is Valentine's Day? And, you know, some random statistic about Valentine's Day, and then it jumps into playing your podcast. So I've just kind of gotten used to there being something there every once in a while, and this was the something today.
Yeah, I mean, it gets to that place where obviously the show is sponsored. We have ads, but I think we do a pretty good job of saying, here's a time we're going to talk about our sponsor, whereas they didn't say that. And a partnership to me sounds like someone's getting paid somewhere, but I want to know. It was the same thing happened with blogs. It was this wild west with blogs, and then companies started, you know, sending bloggers products, and the bloggers would say, oh, this is such an amazing product. Mm. Product. I love it so much. And, you know, it took a while for that to come around to, you know, the FTC finally saying, you know, you have to disclose if, you know, that's an advertiser, if you've been paid for that mention. But But so, you know, I think that with home assistance, we're going to have to, they're going to have to catch up at some point. I'm glad that Google let it go and, you know, decided, well, maybe go. People don't really.
Maybe next yeah. time they should put that in there.
But what I want to know is the guy who tweeted this said, because you could hear in the background from his video, you can hear a child, yay! And so
it's
he.
It's working.
Right, exactly. And he said that he had a daughter and a son. And you have a daughter, and you're the only two people that I know that actually got this. I tweeted it out. Someone else said, oh, yeah, I got that ad too. And I also have a daughter. So I wonder if it's that targeted, you know, if it's like one of the carts, you know, it's like, oh, Google knows so much about you. They know you're going to want to see that movie.
I don't know. I think that would maybe be even bigger news is if they were taking those kind of signals and working it in. I'm my hunch is that no, but yeah, man, you never know. I suppose this is where we should say, send us an email, tnt@twit.tv. If you do not have a kid and you still heard this on your Google Home, then we'll kind of know the answer to that one. But I, you know, overall, we've wondered how or if Google or even any of these virtual, these like home assistants were going to start doing something like this to kind of monetize the stream. Google makes money on ads in all sorts of places. So I guess to a certain extent, one could assume that, oh yeah, well, this would happen eventually. Do I want it? No, I don't necessarily want it filled with ads. This could be construed as an ad. I totally get it, but I was very I wasn't that offended by it. I don't know what that means about me, but
yeah. Well, Micah Sargent, who is from Mobile Nations and he's their smart home expert, he says he got the ad. He says he's not calling it an ad again. He got the Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beat.
Beauty and the Beast thing.
Whatever you want to call it.
And he says he doesn't have a daughter that he knows of.
Okay, well, there we go. There we go. See, science. Or maybe Google knows more about it.
Yeah, that would be
even
scoop.
A bigger story.
That would be a huge scoop. Micah, let us know.
Everyone wants their wearable operating system, am I right? Their own wearable operating system they can call their own. Well, Swatch says it's developing its own wearable OS to compete with watchOS and Android Wear with its first device in the Tissot brand. That's probably what it is. Sporting it sometime around the end of next year. Swatch CEO Nick Hayek expects the OS to be more battery efficient, protect user data better, and connect to other wearables and connected objects. It followed up this decree by then announcing a few hours later its first smartwatch, the Montblanc Summit, running Android Wear 2.0 and costing $890 when it ships this May. So another kind of like high-ish end, kind of one of the traditional watchmakers getting into the fold with smartwatches. But in this case, it really sounds like Swatch in the long term wants to kind of carve its own path. Do you think that's a smart move?
A smart move? I don't know what a smartwatch operating system would look like. I guess like Pebble.
Yeah, it would be something along those lines, I'm guessing.
If it is like Pebble, I don't know if, you know, Pebble did not do so well. So mm-hmm. I don't know what they think, what Swatch thinks they can do that Pebble didn't, except for have been, you know, they've been around making watches for a long time. But I feel like that's why they it's a little bit of desperation. I mean, they make high-end watches that are expensive, and I know people are still buying those, but they have the low-end watches that kids wore. You know, I wore
Swatch
one when
watch.
I was a kid. Remember yes, yeah. exactly. You can exchange, you know, the bands.
Yeah.
And, it was awesome.
Colors, all, it was awesome.
But the kids these days, they do not wear watches. They have phones. They don't care about the watch.
Yeah.
So they have to do something. But yeah, they say the battery issues are the biggest problem with smartwatches. That has not been my experience. With my first Apple Watch, it was a pain. But this one makes it easily through the end of the day, and that is all I need.
Mm-hmm.
I like things I have to charge every day. If it's something that I have to charge
every 4 or 5 days,
yeah,
then
I
just kind of forget.
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly.
I hear you. It sounds like they are also, I guess earlier this month, I missed this, Swatch had announced that it developed the smallest Bluetooth chip in the world. So, you know, one could assume that that's what they're going to be using in this to, quote, connect to other devices at some point. But they say that they really want to focus on miniaturization. And if you're focusing on getting your watch as small as, say, those old school Swatch watches that we remember, you know, those things were kind of tiny, mm-hmm. right? Getting there, still having smart components, but battery efficiency, like all of those things don't necessarily play together. So maybe that's part of what this is, like really focusing on miniaturization so that they can potentially pave a path in the wearable market and really kind of get to that magical point of kind of a smaller size, because size ends up being a big complaint of people with smartwatches and wearables mm-hmm. Right now anyway. So yeah. Maybe they can strike a balance. I don't know.
A new academic paper from the University of Cambridge and The Economist says Google made, quote, inexcusable errors when dealing with sensitive medical information in their partnership between DeepMind and the UK's National Health Service, or the NHS. The researchers take issue with Google's transparency, the way the company obtained consent, as well as how it protected and processed patient data. They say more data was transferred to Google than the scope of the agreement or what Google actually needed for what they were doing. Studies question how the deal between Google's DeepMind and the NHS was set up, how it played out in public. DeepMind says the academic study has serious flaws. So this is a big issue. I mean, we want to keep our health data private, and we also want to take advantage of, you know, the great AI that DeepMind has. And so it's good that there are watchdogs already paying attention to this. And they said, you know, this paper is written just as a cautionary tale between the partnerships between these big companies and public health institutions.
Yeah, what can happen when you take this kind of public body of information, data about people and their medical history and things that we find so sensitive, and that gets transferred to a private firm? And I think a lot of the kind of arguments or a lot of the issues that are posed here and that people are having a problem with is that all of this information kind of went in, and then you really didn't know exactly what happened. You knew what you think was happening, and, you know, in all likelihood, that's a lot probably what exactly happened. It was used to train their AI, and it was the data set that they used and all this kind of stuff. But there weren't any assurances built into that to kind of protect from, you know, from like legal documents, independent oversight, anything like that. It was just, here's a bunch of information from, you know, I think three different hospitals, historical inpatient data for the past 5 years, real-time inpatient data from these hospitals. Here it is. We hope, you know, we trust that you will do what you say you're going to do. And when you're talking about that public body of data, it's not good to trust that without having some protections built into it, it seems.
Yeah. So the NHS gave the data to Google in order for them to create an app called Streams. To help doctors monitor patients with acute kidney injury. I feel like Apple is doing maybe a better job, but they've, you know, with the health kit, they've sort of started getting into this realm, and it's really people agreeing to it. It's, you know, your own, like, things that are on your Apple Watch or your iPhone. And I know I'm always in danger of being called an Apple fangirl, but I do think that they do have privacy in mind more than Google. They're not a giant advertising company like Google is. I do think that every entry, as slow as it may be, that Apple's gone into, you know, health monitoring and using that data has been very careful to be transparent and to be communicating what they're using the data for and having people give consent.
Yeah, that transparency is a big part of it. You know, that's going to allow the greater public to trust what you are doing. And when it's done behind closed doors and you don't have any of that transparency, it's really difficult to trust. A report in the Financial Times shows that Spotify might be making some significant changes to how it handles its free and its paid service tiers. According to the report, Spotify would agree with music companies to hold back big name album releases from the free tier and make them exclusive to the paid tier for a short duration of time. That wasn't specified how long, but as a concession for doing so, the music companies would agree to receiving less in royalties from Spotify for their songs. The deal has apparently been in the works for months, could become official sometime in the next few weeks at the earliest. You know, there was a big deal around this with the whole Taylor Swift thing happened back in 2014. And that was all about Taylor Swift's complaint about Spotify, and I think other artists have kind of followed suit in that regard, is that when their music ends up in a free service tier like Spotify has, it devalues the music, or rather in the public's mind, it makes the public feel like the music is not worth the amount that the artists feel like it is worth. And so this is, I think, a total response to that. And there would be concessions on both sides.
Yeah, and it's good for Spotify too. I mean, because they'll not have to pay as big royalties on their
right.
side. So
and they get more music and
yeah. yeah, and they'll. I mean, they're preparing for an IPO. That's what we hear. So this mm-hmm. makes them look better. I mean, Apple Music doesn't have a free tier at all. They're doing well. I wonder. Do you think that there are some people that are just like, I am not going to pay for music, period. So take away my music on my free Spotify tier, and I'm just going to download it illegally somewhere. Do you think that's just going to happen?
Yes. I do. I think there's plenty of people that do that. But at the same time, I think that the where it's at right now versus even, you know, 3-4 years ago, the cost to buy in now is I mean, you know, it's pretty standard at $10 to get in on these streaming services. And I'm pretty sure a lot of the people that were used to downloading because they didn't want to pay on a per song basis or whatever their reasons for doing that. I mean, you know, the libraries are huge. There's other incentives built into these services. So I think that's transformed that a lot of people away from kind of illegal sharing and stuff into a paid model of some sort. There's always going to be some people, though, that just are unwilling to pay a penny, and they will resort to piracy. And I think that's just kind of always going to be there. But they've made great gains. These services have done a really good job converting people, I feel like, anyways.
Well, goodbye forever, Siri. VentureBeat says that very soon you can get Amazon's intelligent assistant, who shall not be named, on your iPhone or your iPad. You can use the assistant to shop, play music, or control your Kindle books or your Amazon Music with your voice and Amazon's shopping app on iOS. You can also play your flash briefing from wherever you are. Do you listen to our flash briefing? You should listen to our flash briefing. Now you can listen to it wherever.
In the car?
I know. In the
car. Wow.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
So I tried. I don't know if I have this yet. Like, I have the Apple. I updated my Amazon shopping app. And I'm not sure if it's just the microphone or what it is. Because I logged in and I say play my flash briefing. And it doesn't play my flash briefing. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Let me try it again. Play my flash briefing. It didn't. It just found flash briefings.
So flash briefing the... Oh, okay.
It found like the CNN right. flash briefing or our flash briefing.
But it's not like kicking into
no.
it.
No. So okay. I might be doing it wrong, or I might not have it updated yet.
Well, I think I saw that like it's starting to roll out today. So who knows? Maybe it could also be an update in the software. It doesn't necessarily mean functionality hits your phone yet. It could be a server-side switch or something along those lines, but... Yeah. Well, we don't want to say the word out loud, Burke. Burke was saying, say the word and then play my blah, blah, blah. But
oh, yeah.
We do that and then everybody's Echo/device right. is going to do that.
Oh, I should have tried that in the privacy of my own home. I mean, room or whatever. Yeah, maybe you do have to say the word.
I mean, you could, and we could just mute it out.
Yeah. Everybody mute. Everybody
All right.
mute.
All right, here we go. Brace yourselves.
Alexa. No, because no. they don't have, you don't have access to that. Like, they don't give you access. Like
always
say.
On listening
you can't,
for
like
a trigger
only
word.
Siri. And I'll say yeah. her name a bunch of times because she never answers. So.
Yeah, take that, Siri.
Yeah.
Siri feels so bad right now. But, yeah, I mean, it's too bad you can't reassign which voice
yeah,
assistant
you can't. Apple
to
doesn't let you do that.
That's one of those things that Apple does not let. I'm trying to think if you could actually reassign the voice call with like in a screen off state or whatever on Android. I'm not sure, but you can reassign how you summon things like assistant. So for example, on the home screen, if I tap and hold the home button, that will bring up assistant, and you can reprogram those so that it brings up a different home assistant. Mm. So there's a little bit of capability around that. Apparently this won't have support for unlocking smart door locks, but otherwise pretty much unencumbered and fully featured.
Yeah. Your lights and everything.
Yeah.
And awesome.
That's really
let me
cool.
try this. Scooter X says, I should say, what's the weather? Well, it did No, it gave me like weather things I could buy on Amazon, like the AccuRite weather station.
That's exactly what you were looking for.
We'll
Thank
see.
You.
After the break, the barbecue has been eaten, the beer has all been drunk, and we'll find out what one South by Southwest Interactive attendee has to show for himself. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Now, Blue Apron has a mission, and their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to you, to me, to everyone. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for less than $10 per person. Every meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. So whatever you need to make this delicious meal, they will send in a box for you to unwrap like a present. Not all ingredients are created equal, so it's important to know where your food comes from. And Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, ranchers across the United States. Seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef, the chicken, and the pork, they all come from responsibly raised animals. And the produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. By shipping the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, you're also doing a good thing about food waste. They are reducing it, and so are you. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes aren't repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. You can get salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple, vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips. Spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
The annual South by Southwest Conference, whatever you want to call it, festival, I don't know. It's still underway in Austin, Texas, but the interactive portion wrapped up this week. Brian Clark from The Next Web was there to cover the event, and he lived to tell the tale. How's it going, Brian?
I'm good. Very tired, just like you guys said.
We had to like stir you out of bed for this interview. I apologize. Normally you would sleep till tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'd planned on it.
Okay. Well, it means a lot to us that you didn't.
I heard Megan say that there may have been beer there.
Yeah. Was there? That's what I heard too.
I didn't see anything like that.
Yeah, they don't have beer in Austin, Texas.
I heard there was actually more beer than interesting ideas there. Is that true?
Well, if there was any beer, then that would be true, yeah.
What's the biggest difference this year from years past, aside from the fact that there was no beer?
Well, this is the first year I went, so that's the main difference.
That's going to be a hard one to answer.
Yeah. I've covered it plenty, though. So I think the biggest one was we were kind of short of any real tech breakouts.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't the year of Meerkat or Twitter or anything like that. And then in reality, it kind of seemed like the South by Southwest light. It was very non-controversial. There was nothing really that, I mean, other than leading up to the event where they talked about deporting artists and stuff like that, but that had been a clause in the contract for like 6 years. It just didn't really seem like there was a lot going on this year.
Yeah, nothing, like you said, nothing on the scale of like a Twitter or a Meerkat to announce. Did it feel, I don't know, did it lack any sort of energy as a result of that? Or is it just kind of a different style of conference, I guess?
I think the energy was definitely there. The energy is different at South by Southwest as opposed to like a CES where we're all just kind of trying to get from point A to point B without getting run over by other people.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a higher energy type event, but I just don't think there was all that much there to be excited about this year.
Right. Well, you found plenty of things to at least get excited about enough to write articles for. So we've got a few of these to kind of touch base on. We, first of all, I remember kind of when South by Southwest started, saw this, you know, kind of this influx of articles about, kind of the lack of ride sharing options in Austin, or rather that the big ones, Uber and Lyft, are not there for various reasons. Yet you wrote an article saying that you saw the future of ride sharing. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I think Ride Austin was amazing, and I think it kind of sets the bar for what apps like Uber should have been, although I guess it wouldn't really be Uber because Ride Austin was a nonprofit. But the drivers were happier. They're all fully background checked, vetted. There weren't 9,000 of them to go around, so we occasionally got a higher surge than we might have gotten with Uber. But in general, I think just all the drivers are happier. I mean, they have benefits. They're treated like an employee, even though they still are a contractor. They can get insurance. They keep the entire fare for themselves. They're not sharing that with anyone. Ride Austin takes a $2 fee off the top, and then whatever else they get, including tip, goes right into the driver's pocket. So just in general, I think a lot of happy drivers, and I think this is really interesting moving forward if other municipalities that have kind of been battling with Uber all these years move something like this into the forefront. And in reality, the app was pretty much a clone of Uber. You started up and you didn't have to wonder how to use it. It was immediately familiar.
So, yeah, it's interesting that you bring up this point of municipalities really deciding for themselves. It reminds me of, like, you know, states' rights versus, you know, federal laws in some ways. I mean, that's basically what Austin was saying. Like, we want to do this our way. And a service like Ride Austin might not work in New York. I mean, what you said was that it didn't work when there were lots of people there, when it sort of broke down a little bit. And I lived in Austin, and when something like that happens, when it's not South by Southwest, I mean, Austin's very laid back. It's like, okay, we have to wait a little bit. Like, New Yorkers different, like, they'll need a different service. So is this an argument that really the kind of ride sharing should be decided per municipality?
Not so much. I mean, I'm always going to root for a startup type business. I just think if a municipality can do it better, we need to get out of their way and let them try. But on the same note, you mentioned that, and that's true. The app did go down, and it left us stranded. And I don't want to say drinking because there was no beer there, but you know, you get the idea.
That's so, fake news, Brian. That's demonstrably inaccurate information.
those are alternative facts, actually. But yeah, it did go down for a little while, but I think that's less of an issue of it being a bad app and more of an issue of scale. This is the first time they've really got to test it under a huge load. And you know, it failed, but it was right back to working again within 3 or 4 hours. And I think any private company would have had the same issue. I think where you might run into issues is if this happens on a large scale like New York, and then the app goes down, is a municipality who might be underfunded for a ride sharing service like this. Are they going to be as motivated to get it back running as quickly as a private enterprise would? So that's an interesting argument. But as far as keeping drivers happy, like, Ride Austin was legit. It was great.
Awesome. We need a Ride Austin called Ride Austin in Petaluma. And it will be like,
you want to still call it Ride Austin?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know why we need that, but it just sounds fun. What did South by Southwest teach you about virtual reality? You know, it's totally the next big thing, or is it?
Oh, sorry. I fell asleep once you mentioned virtual reality. It was everywhere. And I wrote an article about this too. It seems like, yeah, there you go. They have tunnel vision. They're looking at these products like Oculus and HTC, and they're kind of pushing that as the future of VR, when I don't think these days most of us think that is the future of VR. I think products like Daydream that integrate with your cell phone, something you always have with you that has very little barrier to entry for consumers, I think those are the future. And they were really kind of overlooked at South by Southwest, which wasn't so much the case at CES, where there was a lot of that stuff.
And I mean, it sounds like there was a lot of VR to go around. I mean,
there was so much VR.
So, okay. So you see all these offerings of VR, you know, experiences, even though they're cool, still kind of hard to get super excited about the trend in general. Is that kind of what you're saying? That developers are super charged up about it, but the kind of consumer demand, the consumer passion for it just isn't quite there yet.
I don't even know if developers are getting so charged up about it anymore. I've talked with a lot of studios, and they're talking about kind of cutting their losses with VR and moving on to more traditional games because there's really not the demand they thought there would be, and they're taking really, really large losses. So yeah, I think VR still might be the future, but right now it's a gimmick. I mean, until we have some processing power behind it and maybe we can get something resembling 4K in each eye, it's still very much, I don't know, just a cool thing the first few times you see it, and then you're kind of over it after that.
Yeah.
So you said that a lot of South by Southwest was just tone-deaf manufacturers kind of ignoring consumer demand. Did you see other examples of that besides just VR?
Connected everything. I saw a smart iron, which I don't know why you would need one of those. I also saw connected sneakers. Again, same question that caused me to write another article about how I completely dislike the future if everything is going to be connected. It just seems like kind of we get these buzzworthy trends or hypey type things, and every manufacturer wants to jump on board and just slap that onto a product when it doesn't have an obvious fit. Like, I'm still struggling from CES to understand why I would want to tweet from my fridge.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about this while I'm listening to you talk. It's like SkyMall becoming mainstream technology to a certain degree. It's like, well, let's think of the goofiest things that we can put the internet in because we can, but let's be serious about it.
Well, you were having issues getting a cell to respond to you. Can you imagine yelling at your sneakers? or like uploading your photos to your cloud connected Nikes? I mean, it just seems so strange.
Yeah.
Well, you could see there was like the smart glasses that were from Visa that had the payment chip in them. You know, to me, it was like they were trying to grab headlines. We talked about those because they want to show the ability to put a payment chip in anything and to make, you know, to make contactless payments easier. Was there any of that you could see? It was just, you know, they didn't really think that there was going to be a huge consumer demand for glasses you could pay with, but they were trying to tell a bigger story.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. And in reality, the sneakers were kind of the same thing. The iron, I'm just completely baffled on. I have no idea why anyone needs a smart iron. But the sneakers were the same thing. Like, in a testing environment, that makes a lot of sense. But from what I could understand from the person standing in front of the sneakers, they were kind of trying to push them into mainstream conscience and maybe launch them at some point. And that seems strange. The glasses, that made a lot of sense. I don't think any of us are... I don't think that's the way forward. I think we're all going to be paying with our phones way before that happens. But yeah, there is some utility to some of this stuff, but that doesn't mean the public's ready for it.
I'm going to go back to VR for a second.
Please
only
don't.
Because only for one thing, only because it piqued my interest, because over the weekend I was having a conversation with a friend of mine and we were talking about, you know, you don't need to go to roller coasters anymore. All you need to do is have like a big contraption that you sit in, you put VR, and you can emulate any roller coaster you want if they really kind of built out the infrastructure, or, you know, kind of built out the experiences to match the machine. And then I saw your article about robot VR and gyro or hero, depending on if you're hungry, VR. And that's basically what this does, right? Did you get a chance to take this for a spin?
No, unfortunately, they didn't have it there. They just had kind of a demo video that displayed a little bit of what it could do. And it looked really cool. I mean, there you go. You can see that. It's slightly terrifying. But I guess I could agree with them to an extent. There's a lot of things you could do with this that wouldn't require building a huge track of roller coaster. I don't even know what you call it. Is it track?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could fit a similar type experience in a much smaller place, and that makes a lot of sense. But you kind of look toward the future when we have kind of stuff like this, and you're thinking to yourself, I mean, is that the future we want? I mean, you remember that feeling when you're a little kid of looking up at like this giant roller coaster and just thinking, oh man, that's so amazing. Now you're going to look at this ball with people making goofy faces in it and thinking, what? It's not going to be the same level of excitement, I don't think, until you get inside it.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe the experience is so great that, you know, it changes your mind. Burke would like to point out that robot arms, because this is a thing with Burke. He's really into robot arms. He thinks robot arms are the future.
I get pitched a robot arm a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, pass them to Burke. If you pass on them, maybe Burke will write an article about them.
Burke, hit me up.
So you also literally ran into many connected assistants at the show, some on wheels. What did that tell you about our future of voice activated helper robots?
Well, I I think the most interesting part of it was actually a talk. And it talked about some of the downfalls of smart assistants. Like we all look at Siri and Alexa and think of smart assistants, but it goes much further than that. Smart assistants in the future are going to be somewhat predictive. They're going to try to know what you're thinking and feeling before you feel it. And I use feeling very intentionally there. They're working on actually getting robots or smart assistants that can recognize intent behind the words you're saying, as well as the feeling and emotion that comes along with them. So if you're having a bad day, you know, Siri is going to start singing to you in your pocket or something. I don't know. And it sets this really dangerous precedent for the future, because as the speaker talked about, part of what keeps the human brain functioning and learning and looking for new things is discovery. And if you take that out of the equation by allowing a smart assistant to do all of this stuff, then it kind of, it made me think of, you know, the people in the chairs in WALL-E. It made me think we're all going to kind of be like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More and more, it seems that way.
We don't have to be though.
So we don't.
Steve Henn, he's one of the founders of 60DB. I heard him interviewed about South by Southwest, and he was a journalist, but now he has a startup. And he talked about how he's waiting in line for a talk or a party or something. And, you know, it was supposed to be a place where tech journalists could interact with people with, you know, interesting ideas or startups or products. And that he went through the line and realized everyone in the line was a tech journalist. There were no people actually pitching products. Did you see a lot of that? And what do you think's happening there? Is it just like, is it a sign, like an indicator that there's just not as much money for people with startups to, you know, fly people to Austin for a week?
That's quite possible. And that's also the worst kind of line, because journalists typically get to skip a line, but I don't think you can skip a line with full of journalists.
The tallest ones go first, yeah. Is what, yeah. I've heard.
And I'm totally screwed there. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of that. I think we saw some, I struggle to describe them. Some cool products on the showroom floor, but nothing really that caught my attention and made me think, man, I have to have this. And I don't know if the pace of technology innovation is just slowing down for these smaller companies or what, but it just didn't feel like a great event to me.
So are you saying you would rush back there in a second next year? Does the beer make up for it at least? Come on.
Well, now that I know that there's going to be beer there, according to Megan.
All right.
The parties were fun. The beer was nice. The food was good. And the talks, some of the talks were legitimately great. And then there are others like James Comey backing out that really kind of frustrated a lot of people. And then his replacement goes on and gets lobbed one softball question after another. And so some talks great, some mediocre. I guess that's part of the course. And then the showroom floor just not featuring a ton of things that I would really call innovative. So,
yeah,
I don't know if I'd rush back, but I think I'll probably be there next year.
Yeah, well, it has redeeming qualities. I think South by Southwest has, at least the interactive portion, has a history that you know, a lot of really interesting technology was born from. And so year after year, it's kind of, to a certain degree, riding on that. It really sounds like this year is one of the times where it truly broke away from that kind of history. And it's something maybe a little bit different. So
everybody needs a nap sometimes.
Yeah. That's true. That's very true. Maybe next year we'll see the new Twitter. I don't know. Sorry. What's up?
Oh, I said let's hope.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you had something else. But you do, because I'm going to say Brian Clark, The Next Web. Awesome having you on. Where can people follow your work online?
TheNextWeb.com and Twitter @ Brian Clark.
Right on. Always great to get you on, Brian. Thank you so much, and get some rest.
See you later. I'm going to bed now.
All right. Okay. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
It's feedback time.
Yeah.
TJ Linden writes about our discussion about the explicit photos of the Marines on Facebook and elsewhere. He says, if Vizio can tell what you're watching by matching up the pixels on the TV, is there a way for someone to find copies of these photos and request that they be taken down, and also turn in the websites and the people involved with that website to the authorities? Like Google could search the web for them and help take this kind of stuff down. I think that this is probably a very big problem on the internet, and I feel really bad for these women that this affects, and the helplessness that they must feel. Thank you, TJ. There definitely is that kind of technology. I know Microsoft is really big into using AI to find pictures of child pornography. Mm-hmm. Like they've gotten really good at that. They, you know, on Facebook or elsewhere. So it's definitely possible. I don't know if they're using that technology with this. And I know it's such a widespread problem. And so many people, you know, individuals have the problem where they don't have, like, Microsoft's not going to step in and find the picture that they, you know, in a bad judgment sent to someone and then was forwarded everywhere.
Yeah, right.
Know? So, but it definitely exists. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's creepy to imagine, like, your face print in Facebook. You know, anyone can find you. But there are good uses for that, this kind of technology as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Up next, people risk their lives so you and I can get close to a volcano. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper. They're the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system that's designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but it requires no hardware purchase. Thankfully, you don't have to worry about that because you already have one. You bought a smartphone, and that's what you use with Grasshopper. With their iOS and Android app, callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand, and then, of course, you can use your normal phone number on your phone for your personal phone calls and all that kind of stuff. And it basically makes your phone a dual-purpose device. When you make a call with Grasshopper, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. You simply select a toll-free or local number. You can record a custom greeting, add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers, of course, awesome for marketing. That'll make your business sound even more professional. You can set up department and employee extensions for custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. So you can join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 per month. You have a full 30-day money-back guarantee. So you have no reason not to check it out. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit, and we thank Grasshopper for their support. TNT's fan of the day is Matt Borkin, another repeat fan of the day, who sent us this video via Twitter. We're getting all of these, like, nested submissions saying, "This is how I watch TNT. My brain is hyper. This helps me keep up. Play it with audio." It's one thing to see all the images and nice devil horns. It's one thing to see all the images on four different screens. It's another thing entirely to listen to them all as well.
Yeah. And all I could hear was me saying, "I don't like fruit." Just the hard technology news here.
That's right. We get to the core of technology. That's awesome. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we'll find it.
If you are interested in swimming in a molten lava lake, you are in luck because you can with Google Street View. It's really thanks to two explorers that Google sent to capture the 360-degree images in the crater of the lava lake in Ambrin Vanuatu, a remote island in the South Pacific Ocean.
So cool.
It is pretty cool. So, yeah, you can get real close in there. And what I noticed was, though, even with this, like, you can't, it has that, see that little, like, you know, it's like I was complaining about not being able to do the photosphere. Like, they didn't really do a good job either. Like, they're, you know.
Like the stitching? Where's the stitching?
Where right am in I? The, where? Like, the center where the person's standing. Yeah.
Where?
It's like, look right there. It's all blurry.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got to stitch somewhere.
I know. It's like Padre said, like, do you even photosphere, bro? That's
well, and I mean, I guess it's a photosphere. It's not a photosphere in the sense that they went there with an Android camera and like went ba-doop, and then moved a little bit and went ba-doop, and then created it and then stepped 6 feet and then did another photosphere. They have a camera, thankfully, to take care of that. But
I guess my point
is cool. It's still cool.
My point is that it's cool, but I'd rather go there.
Well, yes. Although I don't know if I'd rather stand by there because quite literally that thing could erupt at any moment. And if it does, you could be screwed.
Yeah.
So these people risked their lives for this photosphere,
mm-hmm.
Megan.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can see the volcano and not risk your life.
Right. But then, I want to live in a world where you can't just see everything on Google Street View.
Why?
Because people should still explore their world.
That wouldn't, seeing something on Street View would not keep me from going to visit.
It would make you go. Maybe. I didn't know this existed, and maybe it would make me go there.
Yeah. I mean, well, they have Street Views for all sorts of different random, you know, things, like going through the Sahara Desert. I think I saw at one time swimming, even, Burke? Underwater?
I've seen that too, yes.
So it's cool. I guarantee you, if I saw an amazing beach on Street View, I'd still want to go there.
Okay.
Maybe not a volcano because I don't want to die.
Mm.
But we could revisit the old Twit Brick House.
That's sad.
this is a way to relive the glory days of the Brick House.
That's true, because we can't go there.
Nope, you can't
go home again.
Those rooms are empty now. Yeah. That round table doesn't exist anymore. The TD desk doesn't turret anymore like a tank.
Really Street View? So that's why the faces are blurred out?
Yeah, it's Street View. I remember that day. They brought in their folks. There's orange hair where OMG Chad is working. There's Frederic. Yep. That's it.
That's
the old place. There you go. Well, that's cool that it's still there, though. You can relive.
That's way cooler than a volcano.
Yeah, exactly. You can get close to that, or you could when it was still there.
Anymore. You could go to that volcano any day, but you can't go back to the brick house.
That's true.
Ryan, why'd you do that? No, I'm sad. Oh,
Megan's sad. She's going to have to take tomorrow off. She's so sad. Mm-hmm. Megan's out tomorrow, effective now, because she's so sad.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Megan, no, if we need you for a few more minutes.
Okay.
Megan's out tomorrow. Joining me in Megan's seat, Nathan Olivares-Giles will be filling your shoes, but I don't think he'll actually be wearing them.
Okay, yeah. He's welcome to.
Okay, we'll see how he feels about that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
Subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT, or just open up your favorite podcast app and find us. We're on all of them. And if you want to see us in person, we'd love to have you in our live audience. Email tickets@twit.tv. And if you want to tweet at me about our group trip to a lava volcano, real, not in VR, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Brian Burnett, our technical director today. Thanks to Burke for Burke Chat and helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show today. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. I will see you tomorrow. Bye, everyone.